Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And welcome back to another rousing episode of Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show and ExtremeGenes.com. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. Well, this week, very excited about this. Thomas McKenty is coming back on the show. He's the Chicago professional who is doing a little thing called the Genealogy Do-Over. And this means basically if you've just been a name collector, you know, as most of us are in the very beginning of our careers in this stuff, you will want to go back through and actually document the material that led you to some of your conclusions. And Thomas is going to talk about what he's got going, how you can participate in it, coming up in just about 7 minutes from now. And then later in the show, imagine getting a call from your granddaughter-in-law who tells you that she has learned that you've been divorced for over 40 some odd years. Yes, it has happened. We're going to talk to the woman who found it. We're going to talk to the grandmother who learned about it. What is the state of that marriage now? It's incredible stuff later in the show. But right now, let's check in with Boston and the chief genealogist of the New England Historic Genealogical Society and American Ancestors. It is David Allen Lambert. Hi, David. How are you?
Greetings from Boston, having freshly come back from Syracuse, New York.
Yeah, how was that?
That was a great conference. There was comfortably over 600 people, people coming in from Canada, from the West Coast, and obviously down in Florida, with New York roots. Great lectures, a lot of interesting vendors, including a colleague of mine. Her name is Brenda. She runs something called Gravestone Girls. Get this. If you've been to a cemetery and you've seen that old sleek gravestone and you got a photograph of it, but it didn't come out well, how about the idea that you can actually have a company make a casting of the gravestone or imagery from it, like maybe the skull and the wings, the death head, etc., and have it at home as a refrigerator magnet? Oh, yeah, she does this sort of thing.
No, really?
Exactly. So if you wanted to have a full-size copy of your ancestor's slate gravestone from long ago or a marble gravestone, she can do it. I've purchased a few from her just for the macabre and nostalgic imagery because I do a lot with cemeteries. So that was fun. I've got some good family history news for you this week. People are big fans of Harry Potter, and J.K. Yes. Rowling, as you know, has wrapped up the series. But she does release on her Harry Potter site different little snippets of Harry Potter news and trivia. And recently, she announced the Potter surname was a nickname, not an occupational surname.
Mm.
Well, longtime Harry Potter fan and genealogist at NEHGS, Lindsay Fulton, you've had on before.
Yep.
She took into this very interesting approach, looking into the location of Linfred of Stinchcombe, the patriarch of the Potter family, and looking into potentially what the surname really should be. And so we're hoping that J.K. Rowling jumps in on this, and that if you have a Harry Potter fan who's not a genealogist yet, maybe this is your way you can embrace that child or grandchild to be interested in the genealogy of Harry Potter, then they'd be interested in their own.
Exactly.
So check out the most recent Vita Brevis at AmericanAncestors.org, which is available to see online, and then look for Lindsay Fulton's article on Harry Potter. Great news. Other exciting news, I'm still always so grateful for what Family Search and others do to put things online. We don't speak much about Canada, but it's very near and dear to my part of my genealogical work. Prince Edward Island deaths from 1721 to 1905, over 16,000 records were just recently put online, which I think is amazing.
Isn't that incredible? And thanks to the volunteers who make that possible.
Really, really. And, you know, all the extra hours they could be doing other things, but they're doing it for the greater good of genealogy and helping people find their family. By the way, the pocket watch of my great-grandfather, a railroad engineer,
yes,
has safely arrived in my hands. And they said it didn't work. I wound it. Chimes perfectly.
Oh, isn't that a killer thing to find? That is so incredible. You don't even have a picture of him, but you got his watch.
I do, and I cherish it. To me, it's a connection for a family that I have nothing from. Two photographs of his wife, nothing beyond that. I know the genealogy, but I don't have anything concrete. Now I have this watch, which I can pass on as an heirloom. But one of the heirlooms I have from another great-grandfather is a postcard from World War I that he sent back to his wife with an embroidered collage of flags for those who were involved in the Allied forces in World War I to fight against the German army. And sometimes these war memorabilia pieces or sweetheart pins are something that you might have from World War I, World War II, trench art that maybe your relative made while whittling a bullet down into maybe a cigarette case or something like that. I'm sure you've seen it in your, you know, maybe
yes.
your own family and friends that they've saved these things. It's great stuff. One of the things on that same line, I've often talked to you about Facebook, how I love, you know, social media, what it does for genealogy to reunite people and kind of gather data together. And on Facebook, I have a concept I always use when I'm talking about military lecturing. It's called Adopt the Regiment. Well, why not create a Facebook group for free, the 12th Massachusetts Infantry in the Civil War?
What a great idea. Yes.
People will Google it. You don't have to do any web page. Facebook does it for you. You post some pictures, post some stories, and the next thing you know, it starts auto-filling. I did something after the survivors of Pearl Harbor disbanded. I decided that I wanted to keep track of the news stories of the last veterans from Pearl Harbor. I created this. It went viral, and it's always very popular at Facebook around December 7th because it's a go-to place where we all post the latest news stories and snippets of World War II veterans from Pearl Harbor. And this can be for the Civil War, Pearl Harbor, Revolutionary War, wherever you want. But it, this way, people will have a go-to place, and it's like a forum, so you can talk about it, and you can post documents, et cetera. It's like, I think it's a great idea, and hopefully I'll see more people doing that.
That is a marvelous tech tip. You got a database for us this week?
I do. NEHGS and Family Search have combined yet again to launch Indiana births and christenings from 1773 to 1933 and Indiana marriages from 1780 to 1992. And this, in total, combines 12,000 births, 23,000 christenings, and over 2 million marriage records, which you can find as a guest user on AmericanAncestors.org.
Exactly. All right. Great stuff, David. Good to talk to you again. We got to get ready to talk about our cruise coming up soon. Maybe we'll get to that next week. All right?
That would be wonderful.
All right. Good stuff. And coming up next, Thomas McKenty is back on the show talking about his genealogy do-over. It's something that you can do online coming up in the not-too-distant future. Stay close on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. And welcome back to Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. Fisher here, the radio root sleuth. And on the line from Chicago with me right now, my friend Thomas McKenty. He is a professional genealogist and consultant. He is the guru of technology in the industry. And we just talked to him a couple of months ago about some of his insight about what is to come. And Thomas, you got a great course coming up here soon. I thought we ought to touch base with you again about this because I think a lot of people could use it.
Yeah, it actually is going to start on October 2nd, and it is called the Genealogy Do-Over. It's kind of radical in nature. It's been running all year on a 13-week cycle. So this will be cycle number 4. Anyone can join in. It's free. It's got its own Facebook page. And it's radical this way. I've been doing genealogy for 25-plus years. And like you, I know you've been doing it for about 30 years.
Yes.
When I started out, I wasn't citing sources. I wasn't following proof standards.
Who did that? Come
right,
on.
Exactly. I was a name collector. If it was in a book, it had to be in my family, and it went into my database.
Sure.
And then you wind up on these wild goose chases. You have what you think are brick walls, but they're actually self-constructed brick walls.
As most are.
Sloppy research.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with this idea of why not just put everything aside, put it in a box, put it away, and I'm not saying burn it or destroy it, but start over from scratch. So the genealogy do-over is a reset button.
I love it. Now, you're in Chicago. I assume it's not just in a classroom there.
No, it's not. This is virtual. This is all online. In fact, our Facebook group has probably over 10,000 members right now. And it's a very supportive group where you can ask questions. Every week, I post tips. I post videos about that week's topics. Every week in the 13-week cycle has a set of topics. We cover things like DNA testing, how to pick the right tests for DNA.
Right.
The difference between collateral research and cluster research. Using a research log. I mean, how many times, Scott, have you ordered the same vital record?
Oh.
Two or three times. I have.
Well, when you do it over the decades, you don't remember those things. I'll also say this, is that your ability to interpret data gets better later.
Exactly. Right. But I found that I didn't have a to-do list. I would just sit down on Ancestry or any other site at like 10 o'clock at night. Next thing I know, it's 2 in the morning, and I look and I say, well, what did I accomplish? I just went from shaky thing to shaky thing on screen.
Yes.
And I didn't break through in any research. So it's very structured, but I don't want to say it's overly structured. It gives a lot of leeway. We also have a subgroup that does what's called a go-over, not a do-over.
Okay.
Go-over people actually don't put their stuff aside, but they go through their records meticulously, citing sources, actually working on proving each data point, and because that's what they want to do.
Right. And you know, this, as I mentioned a couple of months ago, sounds like a great plan for anybody who would consider joining a heritage society like the Mayflower Society, DAR, SAR, because this is what they require you to do.
Exactly. And this is what I found out. And I think in the week three, you actually sit down and you do your research on yourself. And it's not as easy to prove your own birth date and your own birth location as people think.
Really?
I was born in the early 60s, but even then, it's not an easy thing. I know when I was born, but I was not cognizant at that time of the date and the place. I rely on family information that
right.
I was born on a certain date and place. Now, if someone came to me and said, prove it, I know where I can get the records because I've done that work.
Right.
And so it builds good research habits. It gets you to stop and think. We've also seen this. We've seen people work and go back with records like a death certificate, and they said, I never noticed this on the death certificate 10 years ago, or I never looked at this because I didn't have the good habits to pick up on that.
Well, that's true, and I think the other aspect is that we get certain ideas in our heads about
right.
what we're looking for. We make the presumption, and we make
right.
the pieces kind of fit the presumption.
Right.
And then sometimes you go back and revisit it. No matter how good you are, I
yes.
think we all go back and say, oh, wait a minute, look at
right.
that. I hadn't picked up on that detail
right.
before.
And that whole, that sort of bias that we have, that is why this seems very radical of putting stuff aside, but I didn't want the bias of previous research for me. So it's sort of like going all in on my genealogy. But I want people to know that it's not an easy button. There is no easy button in genealogy.
No.
And this really comes through over 13 weeks, and you become a much better genealogist. You work in a supportive group. Every week there's a PDF that you can print and work from. We also, one nice side effect of this is we have genealogy societies starting up special interest groups that are actually doing the do-over. And
wow.
each month they take a topic. Instead of each week, they do one each month, so they're doing a 13-month program.
So you've got other collaborative groups getting involved, and they're teaching it as well in
yes.
terms of everybody kind of shares their explorations
right.
and discoveries.
Exactly. The materials are all free. I don't charge for any of them, and they are copyrighted, but as long as you're sharing them responsibly, and that's what I encourage societies. I have a base article that is free to any genealogy society for their newsletter. They can contact me at High Definition Genealogy, and I will send it to them, and it explains the do-over, and really a lot of societies have said that's what got our members motivated. It's also a great New Year's thing. I know we're coming up. It's not that far away. So we have what's called lurkers. Lurkers are people that don't participate, but they sort of watch on the Facebook group,
right.
and they get mentally ready for the next cycle.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? I think there's a lot of research that's done in the winter because we're so stuck indoors.
Right.
You know, and then we get to the cemeteries and everything in the warmer months.
Right.
But it's a great concept, and I really appreciate that you're stepping up to help people to get there. And really, this is the next level from beginner and
yes.
people who are just getting interested to really learning what it takes, because I'll
right.
tell you what, it's much more satisfying to do it right than to do it
exactly.
on the fly.
Yeah, and I agree. I think what's happened in the past few years, we've seen companies market to newcomers to bring them in the door, but that door has been a revolving door. It's been a turnstile where they don't stay long, they don't stay engaged, they don't follow the educational options. And so what we want to do is if we want to keep those newcomers in the genealogy space, we really need to be better about how we educate them on the right way to do genealogy.
We're talking to Thomas McKenty. He's with High Definition Genealogy. He's got the Genealogy Reset that's coming up. It's a class that's online that you can be involved in. Now, how do people sign up for this?
Well, the best thing is if you're on Facebook, just go ahead and search for Genealogy Do-Over, D-O-O-V-E-R, or search for Genia Bloggers. The other thing is that we have our own URL. It's www.genealogydoover.com.
Now, Thomas, you're going to be at Roots Tech in February, and I understand you're on the docket to speak.
Yes, I am. Actually, I'll be speaking on behalf of the Association of Professional Genealogists, their sponsored lecture. It's about privacy. It's called Scarce New World, Privacy and Genealogy, and how we are dealing with privacy issues and whether we should be concerned. One of the things I touch upon is, will our successors have access to our census records 100 years from now, or will government lock them down?
That's a great question.
And so accessibility to records is addressed as well.
Don't you think also we're going to have some accessibility problems just because of the technology issues, like from 1960 and 70?
Exactly, and also those censuses for 60 and 70 were very different. Right now, I know that Steve Morrison, Joel Weintraub, who got us ready for the 1940 census back in 2012, they're already working on the 1950 census release, which is scheduled for 2022, but I don't know, is that really going to happen? When people in 1940 were enumerated, the enumerator said that no one would ever see this information, not your neighbor, etc. And 72 years later, you're sitting there with your grandfather or father and saying, hey, this is where you lived in Chicago or Bloomington. So, yeah, they're definitely. Let me ask you a question. Do you think you have more privacy than your ancestors did 150 years ago?
No, I don't think I have more privacy than they did.
Yeah, actually, it's a perception issue. You do have more privacy because the expectations are different. There's sort of a right to be left alone that people have. But 150 years ago, when my ancestors stepped out the door, their life was public, and the community felt they had a right to know. I'll give you an example. As late as the 1960s, where I grew up in New York, the local newspaper published a list of people admitted to the hospital.
Yeah, that's right.
You would not see that today.
No.
With HIPAA laws and everything, we have more protections. Also, I found in these newspapers in the 1900s that hotels published a list of people expected to check in that day.
Yeah, that's right.
And it would say this person, and it was great because you found out where they were living. It told you where they were coming in from. But nowadays, when I go and travel, you know, the newspaper doesn't announce it. And so I
think we do on Facebook and Twitter.
Exactly right, we do. The fact is that a lot of these records were public or still are public, but we can sit at home in our pajamas at 2 in the morning and get 100 or 1,000 of those records in one fell swoop. Whereas we used to have to get dressed up, go down to the county clerk.
Yep.
We had to know what we were looking for. We had to ask for them, and there was a process that took much longer.
Unbelievable. Well, it's going to be a great talk. We look forward to hearing it in February at Roots Tech in Salt Lake City. Thomas McKenty with High Definition Genealogy. So glad to have you back on the show, Tom, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thank you.
All right. And coming up next, imagine getting a call from a granddaughter-in-law telling you that you haven't been married for the last 40-some-odd years. Yeah, it happened. Wait till you hear the story from Crystal Johnson and Grandma Aloha Bennett herself, coming up next on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. And welcome back to America's Family History Show, Extreme Genes and ExtremeGenes.com. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth. And every week I get very excited about hearing some of the amazing discoveries that you make. And usually they have to do with people who have been long gone, centuries gone in many cases. But once in a great while, it has to do with people who are still very much with us. And that is the case for Crystal Johnson. Hi, Crystal. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Good. You've been working on your family history for a long time, and this one actually was on your in-laws' side. Tell us what you were doing and what you were looking for and what you found.
Well, I was just double-checking a lot of records. I'm always looking for the little things that they have missed because there's always new things to find online.
That's right.
And so I was looking around, double-checking all the documents, and this document showed up for my husband's grandparents that they were divorced.
Oh.
Yeah, but we had just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary a couple of years ago, and so it was really shocking.
Now, wait a minute. So you find a record that said they were divorced, but you were at their 50th anniversary. And so what were you thinking when you found this?
I thought, oh no, did I find something that I wasn't supposed to? Was this a secret that wasn't supposed to get out? That was my first reaction.
And then did you think it through like, oh, there must be a mistake here, there must be an error?
Well, I wouldn't have thought that it was an error because it is an official document. Her name was spelled, there was like one letter off, but everything else matched up, the dates and the names. And so I turned to my husband and I said, look what I found. This doesn't make any sense. And so we were kind of nervous. We didn't want to call his grandparents and expose that we had figured out their big secret or whatever.
Right. So who'd you call? You had to call somebody. Did you call his parents, his mother?
No, we went straight to Grandma and Grandpa because we figured if this was a secret that they didn't want anyone to know, we should probably check with them first.
Yes. Well, let's get them on the line right now and find out what their thoughts were about this whole thing. This is kind of crazy.
Okay.
Let's see. We've got Aloha Bennett on the phone from Placerville, California. Hi, Aloha. Aloha.
Hello. How are you? Thank you. I hear that a lot.
I'm sure you have your entire life. So we've been talking to Crystal about this whole thing. She was poking around in your affairs and discovered this document about you getting a divorce. Now, give us a little background on this.
Well, about 13 years after we were married, we had a few problems in our family. So we decided to file for a divorce. But at that time, of course, we had to wait 6 months.
Right.
Because that was the law, and you had to have both signatures on that to make it final. Well, we decided that we could work out this problem. So I called my attorney, and he asked me a few questions like, are you together again? And I said, yes. Well, that probably null and voids it already. I said, do I need to get remarried? And he says, no, I will take care of it.
Now, wait a minute. Aloha, what year are we talking about here?
1971, November 11, 1971.
Wow. Almost 44 years ago. Okay.
Yes. So that's what actually happened, and we didn't do anything about it because we didn't get any papers.
The lawyer said, it's good. Don't worry about it. I got your back.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
I just didn't pay any attention to it until my second grandchild, Wendy Drogi, found it also. And I thought, well, again, I'm not going to worry about it. It's just a mistake. But her mother really got on me. She said, hey, you can have repercussions if you don't take care of this. So that's what happened, really.
All right. So you went out and found out that this actually had taken place, that the divorce had been final?
Yes. We were so surprised. And so was the clerk that was at the clerk's office in Placerville.
Let me ask you this. Did you guys have more kids after this?
Yes, we did.
Mm.
I told my daughter that was born in 81. Guess what? You were born out of wedlock. And she uses this slang. She says, what? Shut up.
So tell us, what did you have to do? And did you have to reconsider your entire lives after this? Think, well, we've been divorced. We can do what we want. You've made business decisions. Where does one go once one finds out they've been divorced for 44 years and didn't know it?
Well, that's what we did. We filed at the clerk's office in Placerville, and she looked at that and she says, I've never heard of anything like this. She said, you're going to need a lawyer. You're going to need a judge. That's going to take forever. And she said, hold on a minute. That might even cost you. I don't know. But anyway, I think that the district attorney is right downstairs. He might be on a break. So she races down there. He comes straight up and looks at the books and says, yeah, you're divorced. So he opens another book and looks at it for a while. And he says, I think I got something on here. Let me go downstairs and you come with me. And we'll write this thing up for the judge. He had a whole line of people waiting for him. He had to say, hold on, please. I'll be right with you. He takes us in for another 20 minutes or so and asks us questions. And he writes up this stipulation in order to set aside judgment. And we go back upstairs. And the gal says, looks good. Now we're going to need a judge. And I think he's in session. But wait a minute. I think he is on a break. She runs down where he is. And sure enough, I guess he's on a break. and she's there for about 20 minutes, and he signed it. And she comes back elated. Guess what? He signed it. You are legally married for your 54 years.
Wow.
But that's not all.
Uh-oh.
Now we're going to have to make sure this is recorded. She takes all this bunch of papers out and starts stamping, I don't know how many pages, gives me a copy of it, doesn't charge me for anything on it, and says, take this down to the recorder's office in Placerville now, and you have to make sure that they record this right now. And if they haven't, you have any problem, you give me a call. I did that. They gave us a little problem. I said, call this number. She comes back in about 20, 30 minutes and says, you are legally married. That's how it happened.
So you got married another time. How cool is that?
No kidding. She said, go have a honeymoon or something.
Yeah. Did you have a reception or some kind of celebration?
No, but we went out to dinner and had a good time anyway.
That is amazing, because you really think of the ramifications of it, not knowing that you were divorced. If one of you had passed before the other, and then you get into the ownership of property and all these things, what a mess, huh?
Oh, yeah. I probably would have had to return my Social Security. I probably would have had to, if I passed away, I couldn't get his retirement. There's just all kinds of things that could happen.
Wow. And Crystal, you were thinking you were being snoopy, but I think you saved your grandparents-in-law a lot of trouble.
I'm just glad that she looked into it and could get it all worked out.
No kidding. Well, great story, you guys. Aloha. I'm very happy for you and Brian that things are going well. You're 54 years now?
Yes, 54 years, going on 55.
And they've all been made official.
And it's all official. I have my papers sitting right in front of me. Yes.
Well, great stuff. Thanks to both of you for coming on and sharing this remarkable discovery. And family history research saved the day, Crystal, with this.
That's what I was going to say. This is the main reason I'm talking to you, is because I know how important genealogy is in family history. And this is a good example of one of them.
Good stuff. Thanks so much for coming on. Aloha and Crystal.
Thank you, Crystal,
Thanks.
Too.
And coming up next, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com, our preservation authority, answering a listener question about taking video shot on a cell phone and then transferred to a computer and turning it into a workable DVD. Wow, sounds complicated. But as always, Tom will have the answers on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. It is preservation time on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. Fisher here, the radio root sleuth. That is Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com, our preservation authority. Hi, Tommy. How are you?
Dynamite. Super wonderful.
All right. We got an email from Jade in Tremont, Utah, asking about videos he has shot on his cell phone. He said, I've shot these movies on my iPhone. I've transferred them to my computer. And I'm having problems turning them into a playable DVD that I can play for friends and family. What do I do?
Well, first off, get a Mac.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cheap.
Yeah, that's cheap. Just go buy a Mac. Yeah, I just love Macs. Macs are so easy to use. But you have a PC, so we'll deal with your PC. One thing that you need to be really careful with, we have people bring phones into us all the time or bring in the SD card or email us photos, Dropbox them. And one thing you have to be really, really careful with when you're shooting a family reunion or just making up your own movie or whatever and you're using your camera phones, everybody for some reason shoots them in portrait form, which means they're tall,
right.
They're vertical.
Yes.
But then they don't realize that my TV at home is horizontal and that's, you know, you've got it on a spinner and can spin it around. So you want to be really, really careful. Otherwise, you're going to lose a lot of stuff. You can always stretch it, but then it looks really crazy, especially if you have an aunt that's a little bit overweight. She'll look really, really bad. So you don't want to go there. Just always remember when you're shooting your phone, if your final use is going to be making a playable DVD like Jade says he's looking for, you want to make sure you shoot in landscape mode so your camera is horizontal so it's longer the way your television is.
I think we've all made that mistake at one point or another because we shoot our photos mostly to fit in a photo album.
Exactly.
And then when we do the video, it's like, okay, do you turn it this way or the other way to go landscape?
Exactly, because most people, when they use their phone, they always have it going vertical. They don't do it horizontal.
Right.
It's just, I guess it's like reading a book or something. For some reason, your brain just tells you to do it that way, even though if you turn it horizontal, the keyboard's bigger, everything's nicer, but just our brains aren't adapted to do that way. That's why cameras, when they were invented, when they made like Nikons and the real nice cameras, they were built in landscape mode because that's the way you're supposed to shoot.
Really?
And so people automatically did it. But then when they wanted something in portrait, they had to physically turn the camera sideways. So In most cases, they shot it in landscape. But with the phones, it's just the opposite. So if you shot them the wrong way, there are several things you can do in Photoshop. You go and pick the most important part of the picture. But if you're framing somebody properly and they're like in a portrait mode, like you want to put them in a frame, there's no way you're going to be able to save that. You're going to have to make it so small that when you're looking at your TV, you're only using a quarter to a third of your screen, and it just does not look very good. So preventive maintenance, if this is something you can reshoot, do it. If it's something you can't change, what you're going to have to do is, now that it's on your computer, the easiest way for computers to understand, since obviously computers are digital, not analog, is I would recommend turning it into what's called an MP4. The nice thing about MP4 is MP4s are small, but yet they're super, super good quality, and they're easy to handle or easy to move along. If you need to send it to us, you don't have to send us the phone. You can send us an MP4 via Dropbox, and you can get Dropbox accounts for free. And I have several Dropbox accounts. They're just really awesome. So what you want to do is go in and make it as an MP4, go into Movie Maker or whatever program you have on your PC, and then once you have the MP4, then send us the MP4 via Dropbox, or you can burn it onto a disk. And I think in Jade's letter also, he mentioned something about he was having problems burning it.
Oh.
If you have those problems, then you've got to either put it on a thumb drive, which, remember, thumb drives are not a storage device. Thumb drives are a transfer device. You put it on there, you transfer it, then you back it up on the cloud, you back it up on your hard drive, you back it up on a disk.
Boy, there's so much ground to cover here. And you know what? What occurred to me when you were talking about this, we probably should get in the habit of shooting everything, photographs and videos, in landscape, because you can always make them smaller. You can always turn them into portrait from landscape, but you can't turn them into landscape from portrait, right?
Exactly. That is so true. It's easy, like you say, to go in and take a landscape and edit it so it looks good. And the thing is, most times you can hang a photo on your wall in landscape mode, it's still going to look fine. But you can't turn your television sideways. And I have actually had somebody that what they did is they reshot their television to try to make it bigger, but then you get into pixelization. If you have a good plasma TV, it's not as bad. However, I don't recommend that. That's really trying to Band-Aid something. You need to be really careful. People get language mixed up. People always call me and say, hey, I have a VHS I want put on a CD. Well, I know what they mean. They really mean a DVD. Same thing with this. MP3s and MP4s can be very confusing. On your iPhone or your MP3 player, you have audio, which are what they call MP3s. MP4s are video. They can be video and audio, but you want to be careful when you're asking somebody to do something for you. You could take in a clip and say, hey, I want an MP3 made out of this, and if they take it your word, you're going to get a CD back with just the audio and no video.
Oh, boy.
So you want to be really, really careful whether you're talking to us or anybody else. Make sure when somebody's helping you, if you want video also, you want an MP4. And the MP4 can be video and audio. If you say MP3, all you're going to do is get the audio out of it. So
that's great to know.
Okay, we're talking about MP4s here. And the reason, like I mentioned in the first segment, MP4s are great. They're small, but they're really good quality. And they're easy to put on a flash drive. They're easy to put on an SD card. You can Dropbox them. In fact, if you compress them, you can actually email them. But so once you have the MP4, they're really easy to edit. And the nice thing about editing them, there's a great program from CyberLink. It's called PowerDirector. It's only $50, and it's made for PCs. And Jade said he had a PC. And with that, you can go in and edit your MP4s and do all kinds of cool stuff with them. So that's a good reason to go with MP4s. For other people out there, I've talked about doing AVI files if you're pretty much a PC person, or do MOVs if you're a Mac person, or you're a PC person that's really into video, because there are some programs that can edit both. If I can take anything off the table, off the buffet, I will take a MOV every time, because they're small and they're amazing quality. You put those into Photoshop and you can take sections out of them. You put them in different kinds of editing programs like Final Cut Pro. It's amazing what you can do with those things. They're absolutely awesome. But they're more for somebody that knows what they're doing, that they have hard drives or trying to work on something.
An intermediate type tech.
Exactly. And if you have iMovie, you can edit them. If you have a PC and you're not really into the techie stuff, then you want to go with an AVI. They're bigger, but they can be used with Movie Maker. They can also be used with PowerDirector. But if you want something that's down and dirty, that's going to look nice, it's not going to drive you nuts, MP4s are a great way to go. And like I say, with PowerDirector, you can edit MP4s. You can edit a lot of different things. But PowerDirector is only $50. You download it, go to newegg.com or whoever your favorite retailer is, and just download the program. And it's absolutely an awesome program. And so now that you've got your thing editing an MP4, you go into Power Director or Final Cuts Pro or whatever you're going to do and edit it. One thing you want to do, too, is on your first pass, you want to go through and do all your color correction so your video is exactly how you want it before you go and start messing with your audio. Because a lot of times you're going to have MP4s and you're going to find out, wow, the microphone on my camera really isn't that good. The pictures look great, but the audio is not very good. Then you want to either get an app that has better audio or you want to just redo the audio. Like you can go in and narrate it. You can add different things to it. But after you have the video exactly how you want it, that's when you want to add the audio. Because if you do it backwards,
right,
sometimes the video itself can change the timing and it's going to be out of lip sync and you're going to drive everybody nuts. It's like a backwards echo. An echo doesn't bother you. A backwards echo drives you nuts. So just make sure you do all your video part. When you get that totally timed out, it's perfect. Then go and add your narration or other kinds of audio.
Oh, so much to know, Tom. Thanks so much. Thanks also to Jake for the email. And if you have a question for Tom Perry, you can email him at asktom@tmcplace.com, and you might hear your question answered on the show. Thanks so much, Tom. See you next week.
Awesome. We'll see you then.
That is it for this week. Thanks once again to Crystal Johnson and Aloha Bennett for talking about the divorce that never took place but was in effect for 44 years and they didn't even know it. Unbelievable stuff. If you missed it, catch the podcast. Also to Thomas McKenty for talking about the genealogy do-over he's got going on. Find out more on our website, extremegenes.com. Talk to you again next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.